Welcome back to another episode of Questions with Crocker, with me, Dr. Crocker, an emergency veterinarian, and my husband, Shane.
Hey.
Did you come up with a title yet?
Like a name title for me?
Yeah.
No. We'll just stick with husband.
Husband Shane. Husband, business partner, life partner, all the things. Money man. At work, we joke that you're the finance guy and we can't spend money without you.
That's not a joke.
That's the truth.
That's the truth. That's reality. The finance team needs to approve stuff.
Speaking of spending money, so excited because we are getting our new x-ray put in this week. And the image quality is going to be better. The table is going to like move on its own. We won't have to like move big dogs as much. It's going to be fantastic.
Significantly larger than I anticipated.
It is. So it's funny because
we may should have picked a bigger room.
Well, when we read the specs, it said on there, like, this is the size room you need. And we're like, I mean, we're close. Like, we're off by like an inch or so. Like, I think maybe it was in the depth. And we're like, we'll be fine. That thing is tight in there. Like, there's enough room for a pet and three bodies, maybe. And that's it. So definitely squishing it in there. But we're taking advantage of every section of our hospital, which is very exciting.
We are doing that.
And we are in phase one of the renovation.
Yes.
How many phases are there?
It's a good question. At least three.
At least three.
Possibly five.
Now that we've started, people keep asking me, like, when is this happening? And so I just tell everyone phase three. Like, everything is phase three.
Pretty much phase three will be done with the inside of the building.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have to do under the covered area.
The outside.
The outside of the building and the parking lot. So about six phases.
Oh my gosh, I cannot. We're still just going to call anything after the building phase three. That's perfect. Just what we're doing. So part of that is coming up with a parking plan, a parking assessment?
We're doing a feasibility study.
Okay, explain that a little bit more.
So we have about an acre of land, some of which is not being utilized. So we're trying to determine if we can get revenue off the piece of land that we're not using very well. So the feasibility study gives us ideas of what we can do, what the city will allow. And then based off of that, we'll create a parking plan off of future building plans.
Yes. So you can actually hire people and they look at your lot and then they know like the rules on how many parking spaces you need and handicap spaces. And then they come up with all these options for what you can do on the property.
And they are not cheap and they are not fast.
No, but it's kind of cool because there's parameters around if you have a commercial building, how many spots you have to have. I think we're probably grandfathered in because we do not have wonderful parking.
We have an acre of parking. It's just not labeled.
It is not situated where it is easily accessible. We also have an amazing taco truck that rents a corner of the property from us. And so at lunchtime, you literally cannot get in and out of our hospital pretty much because the taco truck is rocking out.
It's a very popular lunch spot.
Very, very popular and popular with people that drive very large vehicles. So pretty much fills up the parking lot. So if we have better parking, that will help all around and make things more efficient. And then I really want to put commercial buildings on our property potentially that people can rent. No comment?
That's phase 47.
but the yes. Feasibility study will tell us if that's an option.
They will.
So that is important to know so we can plan ahead for the future.
Yes.
I never really even thought we would get this far. We have paint going up on the walls. We have a new x-ray going in. Like, it seems more real all of a sudden, the renovation, and that we're actually going to be able to be in the new space and redo the old area.
The checking account has been screaming very real for a long time. I'm glad we're starting to see some of the results of the stuff we've done.
Yes. Yes, it'll be good. It'll be good. So if you want to see Alta Vista Animal Hospital being renovated, you can follow us at the hospital social media handle, which is at AVAH Vet. And I do behind the scenes. And then I also have a renovation channel on my social media at dr.tanasia. And we're just showing different ideas. We're showing things along the way. A lot of polls to ask people's opinions about things. So I think it's good.
The building needs a lot of love.
A lot of love.
But I see the end result, and I think people are going to be very surprised by the transformation.
I agree. And I think this is one of the things when people are trying to decide, like, do I buy an existing practice versus building a de novo or a startup is if you have a vision of what you want something to look like, it is very hard to buy, especially a much older building, and make it your vision. And so you either have to be able to see what you could do renovation wise and what would be allowed by the city to make it look close to your vision, or you just have to build a new building. But the cost where we live to buy land and build is astronomical. So it worked out much better for us financially to buy an older building on a large piece of property and renovate.
We think.
We hope.
Still to be determined.
Still to be decided. But I do plan on continuing to show the process and then hopefully having a really big fun open house during it. Did I tell you about the beer burros?
Yes.
So
some beer donkeys.
Yeah, I think they need to be in an open house. Maybe we won't have beer in there. I don't know if that would be allowed at like a vet hospital open house, but we could put other drinks in there and it'd be really fun to have the donkeys like walking around and giving everyone their beverages and letting people have a good time.
Seems so. Very safe.
They do weddings and stuff. They have to be safe. Like, this is what they're trained for.
Nah, yeah. Taking your word for it, yes.
I think it's a great idea. I think it's going to be a social media gold. So we need to do it for sure. Okay, so this podcast is based around questions that people ask us. I am an emergency veterinarian, practice owner, mom, do a little bit of social media. Shane is an entrepreneur. You now run how many businesses?
I don't know.
Bought another one recently, so run quite a few businesses, and you have a finance and big business background, right? You do not have your MBA, though.
No.
Someone asked me this the other day. Explain a little bit about why you don't have your MBA, and do you think there's value in getting one, whether you're a veterinarian or have a different background and you're going into business as an entrepreneur?
I think there's a lot of value in MBA. I think probably more so with an executive MBA. Typically, those are something you go back for after you've been out working for 10 or so years.
So there's more than one type of MBA.
Yeah, I think they hold the same credentials. You can get an MBA at any point as long as you get into business school. But they have executive MBA programs that are typically while you're working, and you'll go in for a weekend and you do different things throughout the year. But some of it's remote, and then go in for, you know, long weekends for stuff. Those are a little bit more specific, niche down, and they probably hold a little bit more value because typically you know more specifically what you want to do with what your career.
Yeah.
So I think those are probably a little bit better. And I thought several times about going back to get a executive MBA, but the cost and time associated with it just doesn't make sense yet.
Right.
So
I think that there's a lot of great programs in our industry that can help with some of the business management side of things. And there's also a practice manager extra degree that you can do that has a ton of business associated classes. There is also, if you want to specialize as a practitioner, once you've been out so many years, you can get that advanced level degree too. So I don't know that it necessarily makes a big difference in the long run if you have an MBA or not and you want to be a practice owner or own veterinary hospitals. But I agree with the idea of continuing to like learn and grow overall as a part of this industry, and especially if you are a leader and an owner of a practice, because I think along the way we continue to just learn a lot of things and also learn the differences between the other industries that we're a part of and this one. So we might have to continue to, I don't know, attend classes or do things so that you and I keep learning. And everything that we talk about on here, we are not experts in any way, shape, or form. This is based off our experience. But I do think we have made enough mistakes and learned enough things along the way that sharing our stories has helped some people, and also, I guess, continue to teach us, because I get feedback every time that we post something of people saying, I've done this, I've done that. And so it's been a good little community that we've started on here, which is great. So speaking of learning and being a leader.
But first, let's point out the obvious, because people are going to be looking at me on YouTube. And let's just get it out there.
Are we going to talk about it?
I said no one time, and this is the result of that no.
What do you mean?
My eye, my face.
Oh, stop.
And then you had the audacity to pay off your ER friend and my ER friend for them to call it shingles. So let's just get that out there.
So Shane has a little situation around his eye for people not watching. You can watch on us on YouTube. And he has shingles. Yes. And it is not fun, and it's a little uncomfortable, and he's got his hat pulled.
Also read
low.
That it's stress driven.
What could be a source of stress in your life right now?
I don't know.
I don't know at all. I was a little worried it was contagious. So like now my eye is constantly like bothering me and I keep worrying that I'm having issues popping up on my face. But actually, shingles in people, we are not human doctors, but shingles in people, very serious when it's around the eye. So you're going to go get your eye checked out tomorrow. You're on steroids and antivirals, and also we'll probably get eye drops. And then sometimes it becomes really painful. Are you painful? I mean, I know you're pretty stoic.
It doesn't feel great. I mean, I'm a specimen of a dude and handle pain really well, and you can never tell
lying.
When I'm sick.
Yeah.
But it's not super comfortable.
I do feel bad. I do feel bad.
I can tell.
No, I do. I mean, I do. But
it's obvious at this point.
But I feel like this is going to be an excuse for a while for different things.
I'm going to milk it for quite some time.
As long as you can.
Yeah.
I also feel like for some reason I'm going to get blamed for this because of the stress thing. So you're not supposed to touch your eye.
I'm not.
Oh, okay. You're stressing me out now. I'm definitely going to get shingles. I'm getting itchy right now just thinking about it. Okay, so we do have a question, and we try to answer questions that people submit through social media. And we got, I think, a good one from Angel Clowitter, I think is her name. And she said, I have a specific leadership question. It's about making and proposing changes as a leader in a team in which everyone isn't equal. So there's no hierarchy. What are the best ways to go about this, especially when some individuals may be resistant to change? Definitely know about that. And how would it best be to go about making sure everyone has a voice and is comfortable with the changes while ensuring that things don't stagnate or that communication is lost? Which I think that last part is really important with a big team. So first off, she wants to know, what are the best ways to go about bringing up changes, proposing changes, when you are a part of a team and you have people that you know will be resistant to it?
It's a very long question.
It is a long question. And there's a couple different parts to it. But I think us buying a practice with an existing group of people in place and coming in and trying to figure out and knowing we were going to make changes, it's definitely something that we've experienced. Have you experienced that in jobs you've taken, in leadership positions you've had?
The answer is yes. I think we're a little unique and we make decisions very fast.
We do.
We process information quickly and make decisions fast. And I think we understand that we can pivot as needed. Some people aren't comfortable with making decisions unless they have all the information.
Mm-hmm.
Some people aren't comfortable even if they have information and feel like it's a good decision for change, still not comfortable with change.
So we're comfortable with change because we know if we make a decision and do something and it's not working out, we can pivot in a different direction.
So my approach has always been, well, let's just make a change. I think you're much better at getting feedback and getting buy-in than I am in that process.
Well, I think that's really important. And especially when she was talking about being a part of a team where there's not like a straightforward hierarchy. And what I assume she's saying is it's not just top-down management where basically you have one person that's kind of making all the decisions and then that's just being filtered down to the team and everyone just has to kind of agree that it is more of a collaborative, we're going to come together. These are things we're thinking of. Anyone can make changes and proposals. So, and I would say some of the best ideas come from people on the team that are doing certain jobs and they really recognize a way that you can do something better that maybe the rest of the team doesn't see. So I think for me, this starts with what is your culture as a team? I like the idea of there's really no set hierarchy when proposing and making changes and that everyone can have a voice. I think there's different ways to do that. And one thing that I've found that is important is some people have a louder voice than others. And you usually will have a very vocal minority in a practice that has very strong feelings or is just really confident in what they have to say and share. So those people, you really don't have to make a way for them to propose change or them to break things up because they are the people that are talking the most in the meetings. They are the people that are going to be coming to you frequently and saying, like, this is an issue. We need to do this. And really, that's great to have those types of people, but you want to also leave space and room for the people that are a little quieter. We talk a lot about introverts versus extroverts, and especially in a team meeting and team setting, I think certain people are really nervous to speak up and share their perspective and their feedback. So one thing that I've done is I do a lot of Google Forms. And so if I am thinking about something or I want feedback on something, I will actually make a Google Form and I will send it to the team. And it'll have, for one example, when we were talking about around the holidays, what days were we going to be closed? What days were we going to be open? Would they prefer to kind of have a unpaid day off or, you know, work? I just was able to send like forms and surveys so everyone could kind of put what their preferences were, and then also left a, you know, comment box where they could leave additional comments about it. And it was actually really great feedback for me of what everyone wanted and what they prioritized time off versus, you know, a paid day. And it helped me. And sometimes I can make it anonymous even where people, I don't know who's saying what, and that makes them even more comfortable giving feedback. But I found that is a good way to kind of gauge new ideas. And
yeah, I was gonna say, I think you're really good at collecting ideas or even throwing in your own ideas, having people vote anonymously, and then proposing, let's just try this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those three steps typically have pretty good feedback.
They do, because
pretty good results.
You have to realize ultimately, as like a leader in a practice, a decision has to be made. And there's zero chance that when you are looking at something's not working, you have to make a change. There's zero chance that you can make a decision that is going to make everyone else happy. So you can either say, I'm going to go with like what the majority is comfortable with, or you can say, I like this part of this idea, this part of this idea. I'm going to do like a hybrid. Or you can just say, you know what, I get that this is going to be uncomfortable. And I think voicing that is really important when you're bringing up new changes. But if it's really important to like your vision and what you think needs to happen overall in the long run, you just have to make the change. So sometimes we can get bogged down in wanting our team to give feedback and wanting them to be happy with the change or comfortable with it. And I really think you have to throw that out the window a little bit, because you just can't, that's not going to happen all the time.
I think the other thing that she mentioned in there was, you know, not being complacent or stagnant.
Mm-hmm.
So I think also you have to realize sometimes your team may be complacent.
Mm. Like comfortable.
And comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can't get ideas, you may have to create ideas and then try to get, you know, feedback based off of those.
And some of the ways you can do that are very tangible is, you know, we promote CE. And so we have lunch and learns, and then we talk about things, you know, afterwards. I send people to CE. Even like our CSRs at the front desk can take, like they do the food ordering. So they do like CE for the newest diets, and they can keep us updated on that. So I think if you're always constantly encouraging people to learn and to attend, to find out about newer things, it helps them then bring back ideas. But if you're always in the bubble, like the same practice, the same bubble with the same people, you're really going to be comfortable, and you're not going to realize, honestly, that there's other ways to do things, or there's other protocols, or there's new products. So you kind of have to look outside of your hospital, I think, to get good ideas and have your entire team, you know, be open to that as a whole. Do you think that there's any major changes that we have made that the team had a harder time with in general since we bought the practice?
I'm sure. I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but I'm sure there's some things that were probably talked about behind the scenes.
Like not to us directly.
Not to us directly, but behind the scenes.
I mean, I would say the fact that we had 40% of the people retire probably meant that there were some people uncomfortable with the changes that we had made.
Yeah.
And no one really outwardly was ugly to us about anything or, you know, griping to us, which I appreciate. I always want my door to be open, but I want like a respectful, you know, dialogue if somebody disagrees with something. But I think any initial changes we made right off the bat were made because we knew we wanted the culture to be a certain way. We wanted clients to have a certain experience. We wanted pet patients to be handled a certain way. And those were some things that were kind of non-negotiables. And so those types of changes, I'm okay with especially if you are starting a new practice or you're buying one, with just saying, this is a hard line, right? And then from that hard line, I think you kind of phase out the people that are just not going to be on board with your plan in general or your idea of what the practice will be. And then once you have the people that are like, okay, I can buy into what this is going to be moving forward, that's when you have your team that can be a part of that growing process.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, there's some things that you have to stand up that even if you don't have a hierarchical type practice, there's still certain things that have to be done by somebody at some point to say, here's the culture, mm-hmm. here's the vision, mm-hmm. here's what we have to implement. Now, as a team, how are we going to do that?
Right.
So,
and especially if there's specific things that are making people uncomfortable, like in the way that people talk to each other or the way that they interact with the pet patients. Like, we are not a fear-free practice, but I definitely want the patients to be handled in like a gentle manner. We use a lot of treats. We try to implement a lot of low stress things. And that is not something that every practice does. And I think that that was one thing that we talked a lot about and all of us that are there feel pretty strongly about. And so that was an easy thing to kind of really emphasize and really make clear. Like, we are not going to do these things anymore to get the job done. We are going to make sure that we talk to the pet owners, we communicate what they need. We are not going to have people get hurt. We're not going to have the pets get hurt, which I'm kind of laughing because we had someone get bit this week, unfortunately, in the practice. But that's just another part of owning a hospital. Things can be unpredictable and you can try your best to set everyone up for success, but it doesn't always happen. So I think we answered.
I think understanding people's personalities as well helps with the decision making and figuring out the best way to work with your team. So I know there's a lot of tests you can do as individuals to figure out what their personality is and how they'd like to be communicated with and how their mind kind of thinks. I think that would really help a team figure out the best way to work together as a team, just knowing each individual's personalities and how they fall into certain boxes, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, there's Myers-Briggs tests, there's DISC tests. And it's interesting because I actually did like a new grad event for Hills and I was speaking, but I participated in some of the things and it was cool to kind of do that and see the different personalities. And there was actually, you know, a very majority of personalities that kind of go into veterinary medicine fall into certain categories. And then I was actually in more of a minority, like extroverted, authoritative type role. But hearing, you know, what these people valued in a daily setting was so different than like what I valued, and the things that made them uncomfortable was night and day from what would make me uncomfortable. And so it is very eye-opening to kind of see that and to, like you said, know how people want to be communicated with, what makes them feel safe and secure to speak out. And also the things that are probably going to set them off. Right, exactly. Because everyone has like a tipping point. Everyone has something. Even the quietest person in your practice has something that is going to set them over the edge. And I think that as an owner, when you have people you really value, even if it's not something that you understand, you still have to respect that.
And I would go, so once you kind of know the personalities, once you come up with ideas that you want to implement, everybody's kind of agreed to that through an anonymous process or however you do it. I think the next thing is to over-communicate, right? So when you're actually implementing change, change is hard.
Yeah.
Getting people buy-in is hard. So over-communicating that and talking through it and let people know, I know this is difficult, but let's try it.
Right.
I know this is going to be hard. Let's give it some time. I know this was, you know, tough for the team. Great job today.
Yeah.
But over communicating through that process, I think is going to make the transition much smoother.
Well, and we did that. We changed the PIM system. Mm-hmm. We needed a cloud-based one. That was definitely difficult. We've gotten new equipment that they didn't have before. We've gotten new products in that they didn't have before. So really training on those things and why we're using them and, you know, the cases that we need to think and having them communicate to owners, even that process. And then I think the biggest thing coming up is we really want to change the way we check people in and the whole process of moving through our hospital. I mean, the physical process of how owners are going to come in the building, go into a room and leave is going to be very different when we move into the new area. And I agree with you. It's something that I really have been building to what I really see it looking like. But ultimately, instead of me just saying, hey, this is what's going to happen, my plan is to say, this is what I see happening. This is why I think it's important. This is why I think it's going to help us build this practice, and it's going to help owners and pets be more comfortable. And I like this idea. But let's talk about what problems you see happening with that. And we already kind of did that because I really want to start checking people out in the rooms and not having them go back up to the desk and like cause a lot of congestion. And so I got together the technical staff first and said, hey, this is now going to be you guys, you know, educating at the end of the appointment, answering questions, filling prescriptions, and then saying, hey, I can get you checked out. Here's the different ways. Are you comfortable with this? This is what I'm thinking. What are your concerns about that? And, you know, getting their perspective on it and their feedback has been really helpful when I'm trying to basically come up with what that protocol will be based around each person's job. And I really want to lean into like the strengths of everybody. And I really want to emphasize that's why I'm making these changes. But it's funny the things that they say and their concerns and how some of the things they bring up, I just never would have thought of, because I'm not the person in the room with the owners the most. I'm not the person that is, you know, doing the discharge process. And so it's been great to get that feedback. And it's sometimes frustrating because I would love to just say, this is how we're doing it. I want you to do it. But thinking through it before it even happens and trying to look at what the downfalls will be and mitigate some of that, I think is going to be useful in the long run.
Yeah, 100%. The more you can think through things, no thing you implement is going to be perfect out of the gate.
Right.
But the more you can think through it and talk about it, the better chance you have of being successful.
And I will say that one of the frustrations that you can have as a young veterinarian or a younger team member is feeling like you do have new ideas and exciting ideas, and you've seen something somewhere else or, you know, learned something in school and you want to implement it. And then just feeling very pushed aside because people say, well, we've always done it this way and we've never had a problem before. And I think that's one of the biggest missed opportunities that practices can make, is not looking at people with those fresh new ideas and really considering them. And maybe you don't implement everything, but I'm with you on let's try it. Let's see if it makes things better. And I think from doing relief and going to so many places where things were done so many different ways, it opened my eyes to the fact that there's very few things that are just set.
I would agree. I will say sometimes if you have a great process in place, you don't want to change it.
Right.
Now, the key to change is having change for a certain vision. So if your vision of the practice is evolving, if your customer experience is changing and evolving, you sometimes have to make changes to fulfill that end vision. So even though our check-in process and check-out process today might be great, we may not have any problems at all, it may be flawless, the fact that we want to change the customer experience is going to drive us to change how they check in, how they check out.
Mm-hmm.
So I think sometimes being, as a leader, being open-minded with, here's our vision,
mm-hmm.
we have to create change around this vision, that's when you have to really get the buy-in from the team. It's not that one specific change. It's about the overall vision.
100%. And sometimes you feel a little crazy always talking about how you see things going, what the vision is, what you want the culture to be. But I do think that is the biggest part of being a leader.
That's the heartbeat of the practice.
It is. And if you don't really believe in it, if you don't really think that it's the way things should be, people are going to suss that out. And if you don't understand why you're doing what you're doing, people will also, you know, decide that that is not worthwhile. So I have thought about owning a practice for so long, and I think I have such a strong vision of what it'll be. And it's even changed some since we bought a practice. But I think
it'll continue to evolve.
It will. It will. But I think having a team be a part of that process and that conversation has made the vision even stronger.
I would also say that's part of the team, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to have all kinds of different people that are part of the team to work with. But during the hiring process and the evolution of the team, you have to make sure that you have like-minded individuals that are okay with some some sort or vision of change, right?
Yeah.
If you know they're going to come in and kind of be stuck in their way, they may not be a good ultimate fit for the team.
Yeah.
Especially if we know we're evolving.
Yeah. And that's hard. It's hard to like people, but not have them fit what your practice is going to be. And so there's actually people I know that I love and adore that have said, hey, when you're hiring again, I would love to, you know, come on board. I'm really interested in joining the team. And they're just not the right fit personality wise for what I need. And, you know, maybe they do have good skills, but I already know that they would not be able to be a part of the flow and what we're looking for. So I think that ultimately with this question, it's really just having a conversation, being open about what you're thinking, but being open to feedback ultimately.
Yeah, you have to be open to feedback. I mean, we probably have ideas that when you start talking through with the team, you realize this probably won't work.
Yes.
Let's take a step back and reassess.
Or we've thrown a lot at them in a short amount of time. So I also have learned that, you know, I need to phase some things out, things that don't have to happen right now. It's okay if I wait on those things to communicate them, because I also think it can be overload when you say, I'm so excited about all these things that we're going to do and it's going to be amazing. And then they're like, oh my God, that sounds like so much.
Yeah.
So trying really hard to focus on things that have to happen right now. And really, we've been very lucky because I think we have a great group of people that care about each other and want to see everybody succeed. So it's been good, and I've learned a lot along the way.
I will say we haven't really touched the buy-in or the adoption that much. We talked a little bit about it, but I think you also have to assess. So once you make changes, and we talked about communicating with them, but you also have to have check-ins and say, hey, how is this process really going?
Mm-hmm.
Are there any things we need to tweak?
Mm-hmm.
Are we running into any hiccups we weren't aware of? Sometimes people make changes and then they step back and don't follow through with the actual change. Next thing you know, they're back to the old way, or they're half doing it because there's issues that haven't been talked about. So I think you have to follow through with change and continue to ask questions and continue to be involved, or change will not happen.
Yeah, because it is easier to just be comfortable. And it's easy also to say, yeah, that sounds great, and then not actually do what was proposed or what was done. And that is where having different levels of leadership and having different, you know, direct reports helps, because ultimately I cannot be there all the time and be watching to make sure things are happening like they should be. And there's always going to be reset periods. There's always going to be times where it's either so busy that we start to fall back into old habits, or it's slow and people just get complacent. And so there's got to be time periods where you say, hey guys, we really need to remember that this is important. But I do think that, again, everyone being a part of those decisions helps a little bit with the buy-in aspect of it. But again, ultimately, you're going to have people not on board sometimes with a decision, and sometimes you just have to make that and move forward, and it's either going to work or it's not. But that's part of being the leader ultimately in a practice, is you might make a bad decision and you just have to live with that. But I think I make good decisions, so.
All the time.
I think we answered her question. What do you think?
I don't know.
I think it's good. So Google Forms are definitely helpful so that everyone can have a voice, or just being really intentional about like one-on-one conversations, making sure that communication is two ways and it's just not top down. Always talking about trying things and not making permanent changes, getting feedback about processes and thoughts that you're having, and really listening and pivoting and responding to the feedback. Because one of the number one things I hear is, you know, people saying, well, I told them this, this, and this, and nobody ever listened to me. Nobody ever made the change. Nobody ever did it. And that's one of the worst things you can do as a leader. And I think it very quickly makes people not trust you as a leader when you listen and you say, oh, yeah, great, and you never actually follow through with what they told you. And so it has to definitely be a two-way.
Yeah, and to that point, you don't have to make that change that they suggest, right?
Right.
But you have to be open-minded. You have to listen. And then maybe go back to him and say, I heard you. There's a lot of positive here. Here's why I can't make that change today.
Right.
So I think people accept
that. If I'm going to make the change, it will be in the future. And here's why.
Yeah.
Because I think also when you say great idea, people think right away something's going to be implemented. And man, time moves slow when you own a business and you own a practice. These are not always easy and quick things to get done.
I think the key is over communicating this stuff.
Yeah. Do you think we're good at that?
One of us is very good at communicating. The other just says no one time and gets shingles. Shingles, supposedly.
You have shingles because you are stressed, and that is not my fault. So, all right. We are going to go because we need to go to bed, but hopefully this was helpful, gave you some tips and tricks.
If it wasn't helpful, tell us. Hey, that was not a very good response.
But if you did like it, you can leave a review for us on Spotify or Apple, wherever you listen to your podcast. We would love your questions. Questions like this are really helpful because it makes us also think about our process and how we're doing things. And if anyone has great feedback on this and actually is well-versed in this and studied, let us know, because we'd love to hear from you also. So reach out at Questions with Crocker. Thanks so much for listening, guys, and have a wonderful day.